This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Rushen-Kennison and Noel Lim. It's 6 o'clock in the morning, Thursday the 27th of February, and we're coming to the end of yet another week. It's funny that actually the second month of 2020 is almost at a close. It seems like, where's the time gone?
Well, this week has just flown by, and there's no doubt as to the reason why. Just it's been nonstop since Sunday about what's going on, what's going to happen next, who's actually in charge, all just great things to think about just going forward. But I mean, overall, it's just... I know it seems very chaotic, but this is part of a young democracy, a young parliamentary democracy growing up. I mean, we've seen other countries, other much older countries have seen much more variety of situations, and we're growing out of a one-person rule. So that's a good thing to have, even though it's chaotic.
Yeah, you know, it's only 2 months, right? But I feel like we've done a lot, for example. And this week, either it's been the longest week for some people, or some people just say, oh, you know what, I'm just going to continue working. You know, after all, at the end of the day, there are bills to be paid and so forth, right? Leaders can fight, but, you know, life goes on. So, yeah, so I'm quite amazed. Time just flies by, you know, 2 months and then the 29th and then we're going into March. But I would say... optimistically, maybe some good times ahead for Malaysia. Like maybe this is a time to really take stock of what's really happening, and each, you know, political party should really have a deeper look at themselves and, you know, where they stand in the scheme of things.
And we're going to be taking a look at the results of the latest political turmoils throughout the rest of this show. But right now, in the 6 o'clock hour, what do we have on the agenda for our listeners?
So while we are talking about politics, after the 6:35 a.m. news, we'll be taking a look at the papers and some of the headlines that are coming out from that. And a lot of it is around this proposed unity government about Mahathir's speech yesterday. There was also talk about, there's a lot of talk about Anwar having the support, that is, Anwar having the support to be prime minister from his own parties, and the reasoning behind it is that a unity government, some feel, would just give Tun Mahathir the ability to do whatever he wants.
Which in itself can be scary or a good thing. But the other two stories, I think we're looking at Air New Zealand, as well as what should you focus on, the journey or the destination?
So if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, you may be able to lie flat while in economy. What a miracle. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. That was Electric Light Orchestra with Last Train to London. And this morning we are taking a look at a mode of transportation, not trains, planes. It's because over in New Zealand, so Air New Zealand is looking at introducing a new innovation in economy class, and it's called the Economy Sky Nest. And what it is, it's basically a kind of like a pod hotel to be placed within the economy class that allows people to actually sleep in bunk beds while they're flying to their destinations. And I think it's great because I think most people have gone into economy at some point and struggled with the fact that the seats can only recline about 2 inches. And it makes any kind of overnight sleep on a plane really quite uncomfortable. So yeah, I'm quite keen to actually try this out as and when it actually comes into effect.
Yeah, I would just be curious as to how you convert a seat into these beds. But what it really is it's a section of the plane that's dedicated to this. So it's basically to help you. It's kind of like a pod hotel, a narrow pod hotel with two layers of beds.
6.5 feet long, 23 inches wide.
Yeah, so it's and it's kind of nestled together and in the middle of the plane. So no, not everyone in economy is going to have the ability to convert your seat there, but it's an option. But it also depends on how many on the plane. And there's no real information on how much it's going to cost.
So Air New Zealand, I think, has been known to be quite innovative. So they have something called the Sky Couch currently, so which I think allows for a row of economy seats to be converted into a couch. But that's like only 5 feet one long. So for very tall people, I think this Sky Nest would be more appropriate. Like it looks really like a pod hotel, just like a bed, really a flat bed. And I think it's really going to revolutionise flying. The only thing is that, you know, what's the economics of it, right? How mm-hmm. much would this cost? How much would it cost passengers? How much would it cost the airlines?
Yeah, because it's going to take up quite a lot more space on their planes.
Yeah, and so, but maybe this will cause some excitement. And it's really a shame that Air New Zealand doesn't fly from Malaysia. It only flies from Singapore, I mean, in our part of the world. But yeah, definitely interesting. But I think for Air New Zealand, I think it's always like, I think their earnings have been quite flat in the last few financial periods. I know that because I have been looking at their dividend yields, quite generous dividends. But really, I think Air New Zealand has always been trying to set that benchmark for flying.
Yeah, so the two pillars of basically comes up to 6 bids each time they install this SkyNest thing. So I'm wondering whether they can offset the cost of having maybe two rows of seats with these 6 seats, economy seats, economy bids, I guess. It is interesting. There is a video on YouTube showing you the how it looks and how it works. But it really is just 2 walls with bids coming out of them and in a little bit of a triangle. So you're going to be in close proximity to the rest of the people in that bunk.
Oh, yeah. You could probably reach across the bunk and poke the next person where they're lying. But for me, it seems very similar to the sleeper trains that are already in existence, right? And it's not unfamiliar that planes should be looking at the innovations that happen on train systems and trying to incorporate them into their own economy class. Because Airbus has, I think in 2018, also mooted ideas for bunk beds in their cargo holds. Other companies have talked about economy seats that can flip around so that you can face each other over a communal coffee table, much like the ones that you get in business class and even economy class on some train systems. So I guess the aim here is to make economy class that bit more comfortable, because it's really not comfortable when you think about it. You're packed in there like sardines. Of course, the flip side of it is, how much space is this going to take up? How much revenue is this going to cost the airline? Because there has been research to suggest that over the past few years, size of airplane seats has reduced in efforts to pack more people onto a plane in order to justify the astronomical cost of actually flying a pressurized tin can across thousands of kilometers.
Okay, so hang on. So seats have become smaller, right? So it's not because I've become fatter.
Yes, they've definitely become smaller. No.
You know, but I was just trying to figure out how this works, right? Because not like, I mean, you can't expect to be on the lying down for the entire 18-hour flight. So I was just digging around, and it seems like you will have an economy class seat, and this is, and you can go through this. So it could be that you could take turns on this as opposed to it being the default way of you traveling. So, and then of course they will freshen up the beds for you and all. But let's say it's an 18-hour flight. You want to take a 6-hour nap, comfortable nap. I mean, that could be a thing.
But what if I want to sleep away the entire 18 hours?
Maybe they'll sell the whole thing to you. I don't know. But I think they're looking at different options. Also, it's not regulated yet. So this could completely not happen within the year. It's all coming down to the regulators at this point.
Yeah. So, you know, at takeoff and landing, I wonder how that would work.
Yeah, I think
you would have to be in your seat for sure.
Yeah, there are lots of really interesting questions, I think, stemming from this new idea. But do let us know what you think. Would you try these sleeping pods on planes? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got some messages coming up for you, and then we're taking a look at why you should be focusing on the journey, not the destination. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Electric Blue by Arcade Fire, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. Now, Fast Company has an article this morning talking about why we should stop looking at our goals as the end destination. Rather, we should be looking at them as a journey, right? Because this is specifically talking about some of the resolutions that we perhaps made at the start of the year, if you are the type, of course, to make resolutions. Because, you know, a lot of people don't actually wind up keeping them. Because what we do is that we say, oh, I'm going to be this. Oh, I am going to do that by the end of 2020. But focusing on that end goal can sometimes make you lose steam, particularly if you are not able to perceive the change that you want say a month in.
Yeah, and I'm one of those resolution people, Lynn. And it's not about it's not about completing the resolution. A lot of times, I maybe complete 50% of my resolutions, maybe. But what it does is it spurs a series of actions that in overall increase my level, whether it comes to, let's say I want to increase my fitness and I don't achieve my goal of, let's say, beach body by, I don't know, some holiday.
I'm sure it's very achievable for you,
Rachel. We will see. But what it does is it, doing the actions helps me increase my fitness, increase my health. And you have to be able to acknowledge that change the concept of this very line, changing from the end goal to the journey. And because you never really end anything. I mean, the only real end is death. Anything in between is just a pit stop. It's another thing along the way. How many of us, when we were in school, when we finished PMR, oh, everything's over. No, it's not.
Not a series of exams.
Then you've got SPM after that, and then you've got uni, then you've got work. It's about the journey and whether you are getting better at it. And these little goals can help you improve the overall journey.
Yeah, I think about looking into the journey is really about how you sustain certain behavioral traits or behavior actions that will help you achieve your goal. And I think the article, what it suggests is what you achieved last year is you should review that and look at what actually helped you, what some actions that you took that really helped you. For me, I think I'm also a very resolution person, but I try to, you know, set very doable goals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, it's not to beat myself up if I didn't achieve those goals. You know, sometimes some things, you know, need to be reprioritized.
Yeah, I think that's why one of the things here is to take notes. And sometimes qualitative notes like, oh, I couldn't do this because of this. Because there are some very real reasons for why you can't do what you want to do. I have a few apps which I use to track all these different things. But, you know, this I also feel applies to the politics that we're facing right now. Because every time something happens, we feel like, oh, it's over, or oh yeah, we've won. Like, no, there's no such thing. GE14 was a step in the direction of building a mature democracy, but that doesn't mean that it's over. And this shows us why. It's about the society at large growing up. Because for a long time, for a good 30 years, I think we assumed that Barisan Nasional would just rule forever. And that was the only thing. Now, this is the first time. This is kids that have been kept in who've never really experienced life, finally going to college and being like, oh, this is how democracy is like.
Yeah, I think I identify with that quite a lot, actually, because I was quite politically aware as a student. But looking at Malaysian politics, I always thought, you know, what's the point? Why do I want to get involved in Malaysian politics? Why do I even want to know what's happening if nothing's going to change? And then something did change. And I think for people who lived during the Barisan Nasional era, the first Barisan Nasional era, and who saw that shift to Pakatan Harapan, saw GE14, that really that was the landmark moment, right? That was a watershed moment, because then it really drives home the fact that your vote counts. You know, you're part of a democracy where you actually do have some kind of power. And this, I think, you know, no matter what you say about the performance of Pakatan Harapan or what's currently happening with the government, I don't think you can take that away from the people, because the people have already seen I won't say how easy it is, but how much weight a vote can carry.
It's about creating political engagement, right? And I would argue that this started even earlier, during the Abdullah Badawi time, mm-hmm. when we first saw Barisan Nasional lose 2/3. That was something that was unconceivable before.
Yep.
And then you had the next election after that. And each time they kept losing seats as more and more people got politically engaged. And today, I would say we're at peak political engagement in terms of just maybe you don't agree with the other people, but everyone is getting involved and we are going to grow from this.
Just last year, right, we had people who were really very, very disillusioned with Pakatan Harapan. And it was notable because they were, as people complained, they would also say, well, next election, you know, you better see what's going to happen. We're going to vote them out. That confidence that you are able to vote and change the government is something that we didn't have before. So that I think is an achievement that, you know, we should be quite proud of, actually.
Yeah, so it's exactly about 7 years ago when I interviewed Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim. That was like the first interview that he gave to BFM. Anyway, I was just reflecting on it. You know, the politics have pretty much remained the same. The political discussion around race and religion, mm-hmm. if anything, has become even more intensive. But there's been some change because right now he may be on the cusp of becoming the 8th Prime Minister, right? So there is some change, or, you know, there is some progress, at least on his part.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, progress is really all we can hope for. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to tick every box, achieve every goal, but as long as you progress and you're not stagnant, I think that's something that's worth celebrating.
Yeah, sikit-sikit lagi lama jadi bukit, right?
Absolutely. Well, do let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us, 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We have got the 6:30 news bulletin coming up for you, and then we're starting to take a look at what's on the front pages of the newspapers. But first, here is Patience by Tame Impala, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Something Good Can Work by Two Door Cinema Club, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison, and Noel Lim. Now, taking a look at the front pages of the newspapers this morning, I think unsurprisingly, the political situation has dominated pretty much every single one of the headlines, hasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For sure. Yeah, New Straits Times, a big picture of Mahathir here, based on his live speech yesterday. So if I am permitted, he says, I will try to establish an administration which does not favour any party. And his priority would be the interests of the country. And really, NST has devoted page 2 to 10 just on this, right? So, and then some sub-headlines here, Pakatan Harapan, in and about U-turn, in an about turn, nominates Anwar as Prime Minister. Bersatu Azmin and Warisan, they are behind Tun M. And so there's also, of course, that question whether we should have a snap poll. But experts are saying it's a bad idea. I mean, one is really costly, right? I think there was one figure that was going around 600 million ringgit just to run an elections.
Yeah, so the Star has also, of course, gone with the political situation. Their headline is Still No Closure. But they've continued this report on the report. Reports, I should say, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 8. Those are the pages where you see coverage of the political situation.
Well, Noel Lim, I've got you covered. I've got you beat because I've got the Sina Harian in front of me. And so the front page is Persatuan Mahathir Anwar Hinganakan Crisis Politik. So basically, it's all heating up, right? But they're covering this on page 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 47.
47.
Yeah, I mean, maybe what happened in between. I'm actually going to jump to 47, which is the last page. It's a montage of photos. So you've actually got quite a nice, a lot of the PKR bus going to the palace. A lot of Pakatan photos here, actually, if not all. It gives you a little bit of a picture of how they all traveled to the palace yesterday, which is quite nice. But that's Sina Harian. And on my right, we've got the Malaysian Reserve, which is a one-word headline, just stalemate. So all of it we've talked about so far is coming down to whether it's Mahathir's speech yesterday or whether who's going to be the next PM. And I've got on the third page of the Sina Harian, actually, the story here is Tidak Bagus Untuk Democracy. This is basically a unity government is not good because there's no opposition, and that's not good for any democracy. And this is from the who they interviewed was the Dr. Shamsul Amri Baharudin, who's from UKM. Definitely something that should be considered. I think initially a unity government sounds like a nice idea, but what it does is it basically gives the PM the power to do anything because there are no blocks within the coalition to keep each other in check.
In an ideal situation, or I guess this also would, you would also see policies coming forward in a unity government that would have been cleared by every party beforehand, right? Which can be itself quite a challenge. Say if you have, you know, I think Tun Mahathir, when he came on the Breakfast Grill, speaking to Chuang, said that, you know, a coalition made up of 5 parties is quite difficult already to get things through, much less a supposedly non-partisan unity government.
So, but the difference would be is, like, if you spread out your bets, as Tun Mahathir could do, if you give everyone a cabinet post from different parties, and if you want to retain your cabinet post, you have to play ball then, right? Because no one has the more power than he does at any one moment. And this is, and if you say you get 160 seats, no one party can say, oh, I'm going to topple you down. I'm going to, if I pull out, the rest of the government will come falling as well. There's a lack of that. Whereas with Pakalan Harapan, each of them had equal power. And I mean, Bersatu had, what, 26 seats, but Mahathir has maybe another 10 seats himself. So that you all had that equal playing ground. They all needed each other.
Yeah, so I'm actually slightly on the optimistic side about when he say having an administration which does not favour any party. It sounds like he's thinking of the people that he's going to, you know, bring in on board. They're going to be the most competent people, at least in his eyes, which may or may not, you know, of course, it's based on his judgement. Mm-hmm. And I suppose he's already worked with a group of MPs and he kind of know who works and who is not able to deliver, right? So it really relies on his wise judgment. But of course, I know a lot of people are saying based on his past track record, this dictatorship thing may come emerge again. So
I think there are a lot of jokes and images circulating social media.
Yeah, the memes on him. Yeah,
memes of a cabinet meeting filled with images of Mahathir.
And I think one thing he will do if he's given the opportunity to form this kind of administration is really he's going to look at the most difficult policies. Maybe for example, the math and science teaching it in English, and he's going to maybe focus on that and choosing the people that he know will come on board on that decision.
Yeah, taking a look also just very quickly at The Edge Financial Daily, they've also gone with Dr. M Seek's support for non-partisan government on their front page, but also in a little orange banner also on their front page, stimulus package to be announced today as scheduled. And we're going to be getting a little bit more into this in just a minute. Right now, we've got some messages for you, so be sure to stay tuned after that. BFM 89.9. That was You're Gonna Lose That Girl by The Beatles, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, earlier we were taking a look at the papers, and it was notable that The Edge carries a story on page 5 about the stimulus package that we've been talking about for so long. Last week, it was all but confirmed that it was going to be announced today, and then everything happened over the weekend threw that into question. But apparently, the announcement is going to be happening today as scheduled. So we're going to be keeping an ear out for that. But I think there's been also a lot of speculation over what is actually going to be contained in the stimulus package, particularly since Indonesia announced theirs just 2 days ago, I think.
Yeah, I've got this same story, a similar a headline on the page 2 of the Malaysian Reserve. Tuna meets finance ministry's top officials. Stimulus package to be announced soon. I think we're talking about today. And I think the silver lining here is that even through all this politicking, the government continues to run. And this, again, exemplifies the fact that a government is run by civil servants and not ministers, not by the politicians we appoint. A lot of the work is done by the KSUs, is done by the officials within the government.
The Secretary Generals.
The civil servants, the regular civil servants, day to day, still go to work, still get their projects done. I think we had Dr. Ong Kiang Ming on the show a few days ago, and he was talking about how much work he did with the officials at the MOF to get this stimulus package through or get it done. So that's what they've presented to Tun Mahathir, and as interim prime minister, still does that.
So I think we do have a very well-functioning civil service, and I think even in Belgium, for example, when they didn't have a really functioning government, things were just normal, it was business as usual. But I guess Malaysia is in this state where there's so many, so to speak, policies that need to be fixed, new things to be introduced, for example, math and science to be taught in English, so many things to be done in the education front, that might still require some quite steely leadership, right? So, and it seems like Mahathir, or at least Mahathir thinks that he's the right person for that job. I almost feel if he forms this new cabinet, he's still going to take on that role.
I mean, we were talking about that meme earlier, right? It's Mahathir as DPM, Mahathir as Education Minister, Mahathir as
Finance Minister.
It's just a boardroom full of clones of Tun Mahathir.
Yeah, and speaking of policies that need to be fixed, actually, you kind of wonder what's going to happen because the parliament said the parliamentary sitting was supposed to be in March, but with all of this political upheaval that we're seeing, is that going to continue as normal? You know, what is that parliamentary meeting going to look like if it does continue?
Yeah, so I'm looking at Straits Times, the homepage, right? So there is this, I think this opinion piece by Hassan Jeffrey for the Straits Times. He says that Malaysia crisis has echoes of the past, and at the end of the day, will this end well, right? So even if, say, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim becomes the Prime Minister, are we still going to have the same political debates, you know, the same kind of issues will still crop up?
On a personal level, I feel like Dato' Sri Anwar needs to become the Prime Minister simply because of the promises that have been made and the journey he has taken. But following that, there needs to be a lot more young blood coming through. I think this has been talked about also in the last few days. It's very reminiscent of the 90s politics. It's always nostalgic of a certain era of politics. And we need to move away from that. We have people in their 90s and their 70s deciding the fate of what could be the future of Malaysia. But you know, someone just Kenny has WhatsApped in this link from Instagram, and it's an account called Don't Like That Bro. I like your name already. And it's basically a comic strip of what's happened over the weekend, and it's amazing. If this guy sold this, I would buy it. But I highly recommend you go check it out. You would recognize it's Mahathir playing cards against a shadowy figure.
Yes, and you have to check out the last scene.
It's very Dragon Ball-esque, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, we can't make the same mistake that we did in GE14, right? Because when Pakatan Harapan came in GE14, there was this sense of, oh, everything is going to change, you know, it's all going to be different. Malaysian politics, you know, Malaysia Baharu is going to come in. And when that really didn't really happen, people got disillusioned very fast. The problem, of course, is that even if you have a new coalition in the government in name, a lot of the people, a lot of the players are still the same. A lot of the culture is still the same. So until that changes, I don't think we're going to see some kind of abrupt about face in how our politics is run. And culture is probably the thing that takes the longest to change out of everything else.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, democracy in itself is a slow process. We cannot expect things to move overnight or even within a year or even within a term. There are things that are going to take time. And you don't expect instant gratification when it comes to politics. You know, it's all a bit of a long game.
Don't expect instant gratification anytime. You know,
think
fast
about
money
the opposition
is not
before this, the PKR and the DAPs. I mean, some of them went to jail for what they believed in.
Yeah. And on this, the instant gratification, I really have a lot to say about that. But, you know, but I think the point is, I think politicians have to know that it's not about instant gratification, right? You can't take over the government just over a weekend.
Absolutely. And we're going to be bringing you more political analysis and discussion throughout the rest of the morning. So be sure to stay tuned. We're about to head into the 7 o'clock news now. And after that, the business end of the morning run. But first, Strange Love by Slim Harpo, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.